We are the scrappers when it comes to our heritage. Groups who see a threatened monument, a significant home, or a piece of art fight like the devil to keep it. But who fights for wine? I mean, we save it once it's in the bottle, but how about saving what that wine comes from? Old antique vines. You know, the vines that builders eye and think bulldozer. Well, I bet you haven't pondered them much, but Ray Isle has. He's pondered them a great deal, and this is logical, since he's the executive wine editor of Food & Wine magazine. Ray, good to have you back.
It's great to be back, Lynn. Thanks.
Now, you did a piece on historic old vines in California, and we see that term, old vines, on the label a lot, but what's the story behind this?
Well, I mean, what's interesting is that when you see it on the label, it actually doesn't, it has no legal meaning, which is kind of strange. I could bottle a wine tomorrow from two-year-old vines and just label it old vines on the label. And I could also label it reserve, which also has no legal meaning.
Oh, I see. Okay.
But what's going on in California, what's kind of interesting is there's a kind of a movement to look at some of these historic vineyards as kind of cultural patrimony as well as simply agricultural land. And a couple of winemakers who are particularly into this, a guy named Tegan Pasalacqua and Morgan Twain Peterson, are two of them, started a group called the Historic Vineyard Society. It's a nonprofit to try and kind of identify these older than 50 or 75 or 100-year-old vineyards that really kind of speak to both, you know, the sort of California's, you know, immigrant communities in the early 1900s and also produce, you know, extraordinarily good wine. That they're really not that valuable unless they produce great wine.
Right. So what are some of the vineyards?
Well, for instance, one of the most famous is the Old Hill Vineyard in Sonoma, and Ravenswood has done for years a Old Hill Vineyard bottling, and Brandlin, which is the family that owns it, also does an Old Hill Vineyard bottling. And that's a vineyard that goes back, you know, the origins go back to the mid-1880s, and it's got Zinfandel in it, but it's got, you know, all sorts of other esoteric varieties, because a lot of the planning back then was just farmers sort of planting one variety next to each other in a field blend, essentially. So when you pull grapes from the vineyard, you're getting an extraordinary variety and range of flavors and characters, in a sense.
So are those, a lot of those other grapes that are planted there, do they actually end up in the Zinfandels that are made now?
They do. You know, for one thing, you know, with California wines, if you label it Zinfandel or you label it Cabernet, whatever you label it, you can have 25% of other varieties in there legally. So vineyard like Old Hill, if you do a Zinfandel from it, it may be 20% Cunoise, it may be 5% Mouvet, it may be, you know, lots of little percentages of other things. If you go above 75%, then people tend to use the term mixed blacks for mixed red grapes. It's an old farming term for it. Or you simply label it by the vineyard. So if you look at Ridge's Geyserville wine, you know, it's predominantly Zin. It's like 65% Zin, but it's a bunch of old varieties mixed in with that from the Geyserville vineyard.
It's really interesting that farmers would do that. They'd actually plant the blend in the field so that they save themselves the time.
Well, yeah, save themselves the trouble. I mean, part of it is also you hedge your bets in a sense in terms of the weather and the season, because if you plant, you know, some early ripening varieties and some late ripening varieties and some kind of in the middle, then if you have a cold year, you're guaranteed that some are going to be ripe. And if you have a hot year, you're guaranteed that some aren't going to be overripe. And it kind of balances things out. The other thing is that, you know, if you look at modern winemaking, especially from high-end California wines, you have people planting by grape variety and then fermenting the wines in tiny little, you know, one-ton tanks. You know, a high-end winery may have 50, 60 one-ton stainless steel tanks. Whereas, you know, back then, you had one guy with a vineyard and a big redwood tank.
Right. and that was it.
Whatever he happened to chuck into it.
Exactly. But why preserve these wines? I mean, is this biodiversity?
You know, absolutely. It is biodiversity to an extent, because a lot of these old vineyards have varieties planted in them that simply aren't cultivated anymore. You know, some that are probably close to extinction and some that are just not popular or never won out in the kind of, you know, Darwinian, you know, yeah, Cabernet and Chardonnay take all sweepstakes.
Right. So the group that wants to try to save them, are they fighting modern economy? Because from what I understand, a lot of these small vineyards, you know, a developer comes along, can offer them a fortune.
Absolutely. I mean, I think when, you know, you see this particularly when there's a booming housing market, and especially when you get places where these really old vineyards are sort of butt up against actual housing, Contra Costa County, for instance, you know, suddenly the land can be worth far, far more as an apartment complex than it will ever be as a vineyard. And, you know, the next generation's financial equation may be to say, well, you know, Dad farmed this for 80 years, but you know, shoot, we can sell the land for $400,000 an acre. Why? Yeah. What are we doing with this farm? It's hard to farm. So, you know, so that's a tricky thing. And also fashion plays a role in it, too, because, you know, in Sonoma, for instance, you had some really beautiful old vine Zinfandel vineyards being pulled out to be replanted with Pinot Noir, because Pinot Noir is so popular right now. So what the historic Grape Vineyard Society is trying to do, you know, in addition to just cataloging these places and kind of identifying them, which is the first step, I think that what they're aiming to do eventually is trying to create some sort of tax incentives from the government to keep these things in the ground and, you know, help farmers get a reasonable price for the grapes that will allow them to be sustainable.
Uh-huh. Okay, but in the meantime, you know, before they may disappear, can you give us a few ideas of what to look for in the market?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a number of really terrific wines out there. You know, like there's a guy named Fred Scherer in Sonoma who makes spectacularly good Zinfandel from a 85-year-old vineyard that's been in his family forever. His father still farms it. You know, he said he actually tried to get his dad to stop, and his dad would just get up earlier and earlier to prevent him from getting in touch with him while he was in the vineyard. You know, Scherer's wines are lovely. The Ravenswood wines, the single vineyard Ravenswood Zinfandels, which are all out there, Dickerson and Teldeschi and Old Hill, those are beautiful old vine expressions of Zinfandel. Bedrock Wine Company, which is actually Morgan Twain Peterson, who's the son of Joel Peterson, who founded Ravenswood, he's making some gorgeous wines, and the Turley Zinfandels that Tekin Pasalacqua is making are lovely. And there's, you know, some are hard to find, but you can find their basic old vines blend around, and that's a melange of kind of several of these vineyards put together.
Fascinating. Ray, thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Ray Isle is the executive wine editor for Food & Wine magazine. Now, you can learn more about California's historic vineyards by going to our website, splendidtable.org.